You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. That was more energetic than I normally do, Ryan.
It was.
You prefer the energetic version?
I don't mind it. It's nice.
You're listening to Inside of You. Nah, I don't want to be an announcer guy. You know, I never had a good voice for years. I mean, all of a sudden people are saying, oh, we like your voice. I'm like, oh, all right. Well, thanks, I guess, because I was so used to my voice being annoying and kind of like high-pitched, but maybe I started puberty. I don't know the answer.
In your 40s?
Maybe. You have a good week?
Yeah, I had an okay week. How was your week?
It was pretty good, man. I'm alive. I'm doing my gratitudes more, trying to be thankful for more stuff. Had a great conversation on Instagram Live last week with a kid, Zach, a friend of mine. His dad's a friend of mine. They became friends of mine. I met him at a con, and he has a bionic arm. He was born without a limb.
Wow.
And he writes a comic book called The Bionic Kid, and he's only 12 years old, and what a sensational young man he is, and great, great family, and so positive, and just works really hard. And there's this company called Limitless, Limitless. Limitless. And you could donate and help his cause. They make it easy for people who need bionic arms that, you know, they don't want people to pay. So they could always use your donation. So it's a great place. I think it's limitless.3D, or just go on Instagram to Limitless with a B, Limitless. And I did this great conversation on Instagram Live just with him for like 30 minutes and just talked about him growing up and if it's hard for him and how grateful he is to have a bionic arm. And, you know, and he's just a pleasant kid. And it was really nice to do. Usually I do, you know, Instagram Live to promote my podcast, to promote the band, do something funny. And this felt like it was something good and it was easy. And I love talking to him. So, Zach, all my love to you. Great conversation. You can find that on my Instagram at the Michael Rosenbaum. And thank you everyone for listening. Where can they subscribe, Ryan?
They can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and youtube.com/InsideOfYou with Michael Rosenbaum. And yeah. Then of course the handles of at Inside of You Pod on Twitter, at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah, so please subscribe, follow us. All that. Send 100 emails every week to all your friends and make sure they subscribe. We could use your love. Mm-hmm. Thanks to all my patrons out there. Big family now. Got a lot of patrons. You can go to patreon.com/inside and join today. I'll send you a message after. It's just like a big club. A club full of people who have a lot of similarities and enjoy the podcast and they help it out a little more. They donate and, you know, subscribe. Well, donate, I guess. And there's a bunch of added stuff, you know, Zooms and merch boxes I send and all that stuff. So you guys know the ropes. So what's it called? Patreon.com/inside. And thank you for supporting the band Sunspin. If you want any merch like lunchboxes, hats, beanies, coasters, the band is Sunspin. You can see my logo shirt right here. It says Sunspin. You can get these sweet shirts. Go to sunspin.com. You can book the band if you want. Book a Zoom. And the Inside of You store where you can get tons of merch like Lex autographs, Lex Luthor stuff, Flash stuff, Lex Luthor t-shirts, which I'm almost out of. In fact, a lady ordered a small and we don't have any, so I have to now be the bearer of bad news. Sorry, I don't have one. I'm wearing it. No. thanks. And that's the Inside of You online store. And there's always usually have discounts on there. We had discounts the last 2 weeks. So.
Sweet.
Also, my buddy gave me this bottle of vodka. It's pretty amazing. It's P-A-P-O Papo Joe's, Papo J's, Papo J's Lambanog Vodka. Detailed from 100% coconut nectar in the islands of the Philippines. Papo J's Lambanog Vodka.
Ooh.
So check that out. He's just a buddy. Pretty good weekend. I sometimes just find myself getting overwhelmed and then I take a deep breath and I say, hey, things are okay. And then I think, oh, well, you're not on the right meds or, oh, you're on this. And I'm like, no, you're just, you know, you're not perfect, dude. So go out for a walk, have a workout, disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying. I had some good interviews this last week. We interviewed this one guy who really talked about mental illness and, can't wait till he airs, talks about having a psychosis, psychotic break. And that was interesting. Last week was Richard Speight and Rob Benedict from Supernatural. And, you know, we talk about Rob having a stroke and Richard saving his life. And that's just a fascinating story. So catch up on that one. Today's guest is he's become a friend. I think this guy's got a heart of stone. gold, not stone. Jesus.
A precious stone.
Precious stone.
That's right.
What's a precious stone? Silver?
Like a ruby, like an opal.
Oh, you're thinking that stone.
That's what I was thinking.
You're right.
So I'm trying to justify your slip up.
Yeah, well, we could just forget I said it and stop dwelling on it. Anyway, you've seen him in Goonies. You've seen him in Rudy. You've seen him in Lord of the Rings. This guy's been everywhere. But boy, does he open up. And I just always enjoy talking to him. And you could watch this on video and watch the wonderful Sean Astin. He's a terrific man. I didn't know that, but his dad is... Mr. Adams. He was the original what's his name? Mr. Adams in the Adams family.
I mean, that's as far as I know too.
Yeah. Anyway, why don't we waste no more time and get into Sean Astin?
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sean Astin is in a studio. Do you have a studio at your house, dude?
I'm in my daughter's bedroom.
What?
And we've set up this little, I just recorded a book on tape. And so it's the only room with dead enough sound. So she's like, Dad, are you? I was like, yeah, no, I'm doing a podcast. She goes, can I have my room back?
So you're in your daughter's bedroom right now.
Yeah.
And is it a corner of her bedroom? Is it like, because I
have these little like wardrobe stands with furniture pads on them, but I'm so sick of Zooms. Like, oh, here's your backyard. Oh, this is your living room. Oh, this is your whatever. I'm like, you know what, I just have this thing set up. I'm gonna do this like some badass in a studio guy.
Well, it looks like professional. It looks like, I mean, you know, your mic's in the air. You know, it's not just in front of you. Yeah, you got the sound sheets up, the blankets. You could be anywhere, but
I know there's her little.
Oh, look at that!
It's inappropriate for me to show her room, so I'm just gonna.
It's completely inappropriate. How are you, buddy? I miss you.
I'm so boring. That's what I am. I'm boring now. I miss you too. You haven't changed a bit. COVID hasn't hurt you.
That's not true. I had, knock on wood, I haven't gotten COVID, but like I was just saying today, Ryan's like, you look like shit. I go, well, you know, I just got off these meds that, you know, for, you know, some anxiety stuff, and I got off it, and I'm just a little dizzy. I'm like a little bit off, and I just took a big poop. So that was cool. But
so you're off, like if you lay down and then you sit up, you're off? Or no, you're just, it's like
just
all the time.
It's just like, you know, when I turn my head, it's just it's a second of like it kind of comes back to me. But it's
when did you finish?
Your 2 days ago. You know, it's kind of an abrupt thing. It was just like I was on a low dose and it was just like not working. So
I don't know how everyone isn't on anxiety medicine. I mean, gee, many Christmas. This entire planet is anxiety inducing. You know, I mean, at this point, helicopters go over the house low, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, it's over. The incoming is here. Sorry that you had that challenge, but you look, from my side of things, badass as usual.
Well, thanks. There's some filters on. No, there's no filters. But like, you know, I know we've talked about this in the past, but like, I mean, are you anxious? Are you getting anxiety? Do you deal with it? You take any like Xanax or anything that's like cope with this shiza?
I haven't taken any anxiety medicine. We're all the mental health situation coming out of this pandemic for every single human being is something that has to be addressed actively. I don't think any of us, I mean, I saw some show from the 80s. We were sitting watching TV, which is like what we do. And some show from the 80s came on and there was a scene with a bunch of people in it. And I literally had this feeling of like being worried about the people in the room. Like all those people are in the same room together. That's not healthy. That's not safe. You're like, that's 1987. Definitely my entire consciousness has been, you know, re configured or something. So yeah, no, I mean, we're hurting. We're absolutely hurting. There's no question about it.
When you say we're hurting, your family's hurting?
Yeah, all me, my wife seems to handle it the best, but each of the kids, we have three daughters.
Yep.
We all go through moments where you're like, what is wrong with you? What's going, oh, like, wait a minute. Maybe if it wasn't COVID for the last 12 months, this moment of, you know, anxiety just has a different word. Like, what is anxiety? You know, we got a camper. Ooh. We haven't left the house.
Wait a minute. You haven't left the house since March?
In a year.
No. Come on. You go to the grocery store.
No, everything gets delivered. The groceries get delivered on the steps, sits out there for a half hour. My girls all have asthma and they all get pneumonia really easy. And so their doctor early on was like, you know what? You're not in a high risk group. My wife actually is, because she has a thing, but I don't know how much I'm supposed to talk about with that, but they're like, you need to be on the extreme end of cautious. So we took that now, you know, yeah. So yeah, I have anxiety. Now we're like, when do you go outside? Every time I see people outside, I'm like, oh my God, what's going on with them? The only time I've gone outside was our car battery when the fires were happening. I'm like, if we have to evacuate because of the fires, we need to make sure the cars are running. So I had to go out and jumpstart the cars because the battery died. And then I would just drive around in circles inside of our little gated community, you know, for 25, 30 minutes, watching people walking their dogs without masks and being like, like they're vampires. The people without their mask on. So yeah, I mean, and then we got a camper, but we had our former nanny and who was sort of functioned like an assistant for us really for a lot of years, was happy to greet the camper. When I say camper, I mean like one of those teardrop fits one person guy in Yosemite who's going to be rock climbing outdoor campers, right? Like,
not like I'm thinking of a big RV, like a camper.
No. This is like you can pull it behind a car. It's so small. You can lift it up and move it, but it's got like, you know, all the stuff you'd want. It's got a
stove,
stove and a microwave and a bathroom and all that stuff, all within, you know, it's like the size of three porta potties, but in a teardrop shape. And we got it because the girls were worried. And this was right when it was happening. This was like in May, right during one of the first big peak, I guess.
Right.
And the girls, we were worried like, okay, the last time we had to evacuate the house, first we spent 2 days in a hotel. And then we have all these dogs. Oh, that's instead of Xanax, we got a puppy.
that calms your anxiety, the puppy.
Well, it completely takes your attention away from everything. And they're so cute. So, but once that settles, you have to keep getting a puppy like every 6 months.
what kind of puppy? I go crazy. I have a 2.5-year-old in it.
This one is a King Charles, King Charles Cavalier, whatever it's called. Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. And it is so cute. He's like she's like a teenager now. She's grown from this to this. And she's, my wife was up all night with her last night because she must have eaten like a piece of popcorn that she shouldn't have had or something. So that wasn't a pretty story. But I can't even talk about our dog situation, but we have, that's our, but the camper, so it's small enough to fit in the garage. And we have like a normal two-door, you know, we have a two-door and then a one-door. So it's like, you know.
Why such a small camper? You've got three girls, you got a wife, you got dogs,
It was a bad decision. It's a bad.
Get something bigger. You got a little money. I mean, you got three kids, so I don't know how much. Well, but we did.
But where are you going to put it? Where are you going to put it?
Your driveway in front of the house. Let people be upset that you got it.
We live on a hill like this, like yours, but like three times as steep as yours.
Ooh.
Like this. Like if you drop a basketball you get out of the back and you open up and a basketball falls out, you will kill a child on a tricycle at the bottom of the hill. It is.
It ends up at the forum.
It is a steep. Remember that Bill Cosby routine about go-karts? It's like do you remember that? Comedy album? It's like his first or second comedy album. He did this hilarious thing about go-karts. I don't know. Maybe we're not allowed to laugh at it now, but anyhow.
Oh, you can laugh at it now.
But the whole idea of it. Listen, this is like your anxiety. You managed it.
What do you mean I managed it? I'm trying to manage it right now as I speak to you.
But think of the absurdity of how everyone is thinking about things. It's absurd.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was watching the news today, Sean, and I don't want to just throw, you know, useless knowledge or like hearsay, but I did hear something like, oh, well, we know that the vaccines last at least 3 months. I'm like, I literally from the other room go, what? 3 months?
Was that from the White House briefing room? Was that from the CDC thing? Was that
it was.
My biggest problem has been, you look at some of these other countries and they may not be 100% accurate with what they're saying, but they seem to be speaking with one clear voice. And in our freedom-loving country, there's no consistency in what you're hearing, partially because they're learning what's happening right. as it's happening. Don't wear masks or only wear masks for other people. Oh, yeah, you got to wear masks for yourself. And, you know, you play them back to back and you're like, are these people schizophrenic or are they really learning something as they go along? And not just that, but, you know, this situation was predictable and predicted. I mean, have you seen Contagion? Well, you've been just, it's great for your anxiety if you watch Contagion.
I'm not watching that shit. I watched Greenland last night. My friend Morena Backrum was in this movie Greenland with Gerard Butler, not Jeopardy.
Totally different guy,
completely different noses. Or is that Cyrano de Bergerac?
Her body mass index.
But I watched it and it was like these meteor falling out of the sky, meteors. And I just was like, Ryan, I was like, holy crap. That gave me some anxiety right there. That was enough, you know? That could happen. Oh. You never know. You always hear, a meteor is 400 million miles away. It probably won't strike Earth. And no one gives a shit. They're like, oh, yeah, whatever. Not listening.
I always hear that there's a meteor that might crash tomorrow, and then it passes by. Well, we dodged a bullet with that one. And you're like, first of all, why didn't you? I want to know in enough time to panic. I don't want to like have my,
you
don't
can't
rob me of my panic.
Rob me of my panic. You don't want to know if it's happening. I want to know. It's got to be like the last second. They're like, a meteor is expected to strike. And it's either that or they don't even tell you, because it's like the fear that it will be instilled upon us. I think that will just, everybody will run over each other and, you know.
I remember seeing, I think it was Sandra Bullock on the Letterman show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was her. It might have been another actress, but I think it was her. And her private jet had some trouble when it was landing, like the landing gear messed up or there was a flat tire when it landed and there was skidding involved.
Mm.
And she's telling David Letterman this anecdote about what happened. And he's like, my God, well, what were you thinking? Are you okay? And she described it a little bit. And he's like, yeah, but you seem so calm. And she goes, well, it's not happening now.
yeah. That's true.
Like, let us calibrate our terror relative to the timing of the threat. So we know, like, there's a lot that we know and understand, and we can, and this is where religion can play a useful role, or jazz music can play a useful role. Like, some people are like, you know what? We're all, nobody's getting out of this alive. We're all, you know what I mean? If we're lucky, we live to 117, like that lady who just beat COVID in France or wherever.
I mean, the queen's almost 100. Margaret lived till 100 and something, you know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. So then we are, midlife at the moment, if we're, but the point is, like, there was a moment when Lord of the Rings won Best Picture, that moment, I was like, I feel like I've made a contribution to the world. I feel like I've done, like, if I die now, I can die at peace because I did something. And I think teachers and nurses and firefighters, like, if whatever your thing is, if you live, and it doesn't have to be epic, you know, it's like some people, my wife, I remember when we first got together, we were sitting in the bathtub with my gorgeous girlfriend at the time. And, you know, she was this, she's sexy and always still is, of course.
You're sitting in the bathtub with your wife.
Yeah.
She's obviously like, naked.
Yeah, we take baths naked.
Okay,
yeah.
I just wanted to make sure, because you never know.
No, some people... I'm just painting a picture for you, man. We just had our 30th first date anniversary on the 13th.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you're going to be 50 in a week.
And I'm going to be 50. Is it a week? Yeah.
Holy shit, buddy. Life.
Woo,
but you already made a contribution, so who cares whatever you
do now?
Well,
that's the thing. Well, we were in this bathtub, and I proposed to her the first minute I met her. I was like, you know, the fact that she even looked twice at me was ridiculous. Like, clearly she had some mental defects, because you can't be that gorgeous and that stupid. Like, to go for me, I'm like this spastic actor guy running around. And but we're there, and she's from Indiana. Her dad was a firefighter.
I grew up in Indiana.
Indiana's beautiful, right? And you know, but she was small town people. She was working actually in Beverly Hills at the time at a commercial agency. That's how we met. But her mentality, as sophisticated as she was like real people. You know, she's like a normal
how
person.
How so?
Says what she means what she says. Like, you know, can see artifice for what it is. You know, like enjoys things that are exciting and. You know, whatever, but has a sense of perspective about the world. It's just a worldview. I know, you know, that some people have a way of being, a settledness. She came from a family, like her mom died when she was three. Her dad cycled through a lot of different women. There was a lot of drama in her early life. And it just what came out of that was a person who was like, you know what, that can define me, or I can be me.
You know what, though? What I just figured out, what you just said, her dad died when she was, her mom died when she was three.
Yeah,
her dad, you know, was a philanderer, you know, with women coming in and out. And then my thought is, then she sees you. And for some reason, you're already in the bathtub when she sees you. And she looks at you and says, this.
Yeah.
Because this guy, you have a certain disposition that gives comfort to people. You are comforting, Sean. And I think that's a big part of, am I wrong? She just felt like you are a humble man who could give her other things besides pleasure.
I think I was both a nurturing type figure, like a stable person.
Yeah.
'Cause I was all in from the second I met her. You know what I mean? There was no.
How fast? No, come on. People say that, but how fast were you all in?
5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Maybe this, less.
Maybe not.
She walked in. Her late brother Carrington. That's he painted that.
Oh wow!
That's his painting. He was a painter.
He
worked down the hall. She worked in the celebrity side, and he worked in the non-celebrity side. I don't know, whatever. But he came in like 5 minutes after we met, and she said, "This is my brother Carrington." And I stood up and said, "Carrington, it's a pleasure to meet you. May I have permission to marry your sister?" And she was just had broken up with someone that he did not like. So he was like, sure.
Just like that.
He just sold her out. I'm like, damn, he's kind of like, don't trust that guy now. Like,
how many dates before you actually proposed? How long was it? A year?
I think like on my knee with a ring, formal proposal was 3 months.
Jeez. I couldn't imagine that. I mean, I hope, God willing, that happens to me someday. That
it
I just
have to happen like that for everybody.
Well,
everybody
no, but I think it will for me. I think if I'm going to either that or it's just someone sticks with me for so long that I'm just like, I don't know. They're still around. Maybe I should just marry this person if they could put up with my shit. I'm going to because I just watched this Richard Pryor documentary, and this woman just kept. I mean, this guy was not a great. I mean, look, genius comedian, one of the best, but also not a great guy. I mean, you know, there's some dark shit, and she stood. But even if after he got burned, even after he got, I think MS or you know, she stood by him. He says, "Oh, let's get married." She's like, "I mean, I don't even know how she said yes, but she did." And I think that he felt like, "Wow, no matter what I do, she sticks around, man. She loves me that unconditionally." And there's something to be said about that. Like, you know, they put up with your shit. And I think for me, there's probably some deep down childhood shit that I'm like, I can't be loved. I don't believe it. There's gotta be ulterior motives. No one could love me. There's gotta be that.
You.
I know there is. And
I
so,
love you.
Well, I love you too. But I think that there has to come a time where you have to say, you know what? I'm worthy. You know, someone should love me, but you've always felt like you could be loved. You're a lovable guy, right?
I'm telling you, I love you. I haven't done an interview in a year.
Really?
Well, I mean, I'm doing different things, but like the reason we're doing this interview is because there's something inside of you, some some pure thing that I, that means something to me. And I, and of course you're worthy of love. Of course you are. You know, a lot of times you feel like some people, like, you're a thoughtful guy and you're not just thought, you're an emotionally thoughtful guy. And you're, and sometimes you feel like you wouldn't be, you know, like you wouldn't be good for the other person, you know, like you, like, but you would.
But I feel like I'm going to let him down. I always feel like I'm going to let you down.
I let my wife down so much. It's just awful. I honestly, I like,
you let her down with the camper. With
her for her. Like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I am me. And I'm, yeah, no, we always let each other down. But like with the Richard Pryor thing, there's something inside. In particular, if you can see that thing inside somebody else and other people can't see it because they're wowed by the spectacularity of it all, or they're put off by the you know, the grotesquerie of all of it, but you see that thing in them and they know you do and they see it in you, that bond, that's, there's something, it's a connection, it's a soul, it's
profound.
A profound, you know,
it is.
But my, what I said in the bathtub to my wife was, because I wanted to be president of the United States, I wanted to be the CEO of a $1 billion corporation, I wanted to be like David Lean or some filmmaker on some spectacular scale. I wanted everything. I wanted it all, man. And I, and so we're, and but this girl was like more important than any of that because she was her. And I said, trying to negotiate our future in the bathtub, I said, do you believe that some people are destined for greatness? And she said, I believe you can be happy having a simple life. And I was like, fuck, I knew she was going to say something like that.
Jesus, man.
And so like somewhere when it comes to being afraid of the things in this world that can kill us, like, you have to take care. You have to be cautious. But at a certain point, you have to live. I mean, that's what I'm going to be trying to tell myself when it's time to go back outside. This is a guy in a bunker talking.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
The most extreme thing, no, I think I felt depression during this, but I think the most acute thing I've felt, and it's happened like five times over the year, is a claustrophobia, a panic associated with claustrophobia. Like, normally I would think that I would be the kind of person who'd go out and help with food distribution for people or something to contribute to society. I'd want to be one of those people. And it's probably good that I'm probably lucky I didn't do that, because I'm like heavy and like when you're,
you I actually think, look good. I look at you like you lost weight actually.
From the time I saw you, I did, but my pandemic, I lost 30 pounds. I juiced and fitness and did all that in the, you know, like on the treadmill and in the backyard with jumping jacks and in the sun all the time. And in February, March last year, I was like the pinup guy I always wanted to be.
Oh, I remember you were like really rocking it.
Yeah. And then came May and June and July, and I hadn't eaten any sugar, no refined sugar at all, because it's sugar is my heroin, until July. And then the second I ate sugar starting in July, catastrophic. It was a catastrophic. Yeah. It was a systems failure.
I've been doing that, Sean. I've been, I never was a sweets guy. I was like, I don't really buy sweets. I'll eat chips, but I won't eat sweets. And all of a sudden, the last few months, the whole Girl Scout cookie shit, you know, people are like saying buy that. So I'm like, of course I will. And then I'm not going to eat them. I'll give them away. And then the mints, you can't not eat the mints. And then you got the peanut butter cookies. So you throw them in the fucking freezer or fridge and they get real hard.
Who eats the coconut ones though? Nobody's
going
to eat those.
No coconut. But then all of a sudden you're like going, then I'm ordering post-mating Jamba Juice smoothies. I'm like spending $18 to have something delivered. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? And it's like Sugar City. Today was the first day I had a trainer come. He stood outside the garage outside and just told me what to do. And it was hard. Maybe that's why I'm a little lightheaded today. But it is
what did
so.
You eat? Did you eat food?
Yeah, I did. I had a big breakfast. I had eggs, bacon, and I cooked myself some eggs, bacon,
perfect,
and toast. Yeah.
Perfect workout food.
No,
I wouldn't say. Well, bacon probably not.
What's wrong with bacon?
Maybe protein, but like right before you worked out.
No, right after.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. So you were carb loading up or whatever. Well, yeah, man. I mean. Like I had a donut and I had like, you know, I had grapes and I
I don't know why I feel like shit.
I had positional vertigo once. You know what that is?
All I know is vertigo is the Jimmy Stewart movie that is creepy that you can't look down because you get dizzy.
Right. So there's a word that I always conical. The conical inner ear, like it looks like a shell. Deep in your inner ear, when you go into the ear, nose, and throat guy, they'll show you a picture of like, oh, this is your inner ear. Sometimes this can happen to people where you get a tiny, like tiny, can't even see it with the naked eye, piece of grit or something that lands wrong in there, and it makes you dizzy. I was doing a thing where I'd be in the bed and I'd sit up and my eyes would be going like this. And Jesus. I'm like, oh my God, I'm dying. Or I'd lean forward and you feel like this pressure in your head and you look up and my eyes go. So I went to the doctor and they did all these tests and they go, you have positional vertigo. I'm like, what the,
how do I get rid of it?
I said, how do you get rid of it? He goes, it's really actually, it's kind of a lifelong thing.
What?
I've been experiencing it for weeks, for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I thought maybe I have the flu. I don't know. I don't know what I thought it was, but I'm not like a race to the doctor kind of guy back then and in my 20s. And the second he said that, I never had it again. Well, I may have had it a couple times, like in the last 30 years, I was like, there's no way I'm going to have that all the time. So I don't know if it was psychosomatic or if I just dealt with it a little bit better, but I don't know what the situation was, but I always thought it could get me out of like a DUI.
I have positional vertigo.
I don't really
These tests of yours are not going to work. Can you walk the straight line? No, I've just told you I have something in my Killicule? What is the little
I have positional vertigo, Your Honor.
What's the thing in your ear? The collicule? The conical?
Conical.
The hairy conicule?
Cone. Conical means cone.
Conical means
the inner ear is shaped like a cone.
Right, gotcha.
But I'm just saying, like, so I know that dizzy sensation. But what I'm saying was the panic associated with claustrophobia. Because I would look outside and it was literally, we have a nice big home. We're very lucky. We have a nice backyard. We can go in a pool and lay out in the sun and like we're, if you're going to be in house arrest somewhere, this is where you'd want to be in house arrest. Yeah. It's nice, but at a certain point, I remember Shaq saying at one point when he lost a championship and was it before Kobe or with, I can't remember, but he was like, it doesn't matter how rich you are when you lose. He's like, you've got four walls. And when you win, they seem like the biggest four walls ever. They go, when you lose, it's just a fucking wall. And you're just staring at a wall.
Right.
And I remember thinking like this optical sensation that the walls were like wobbly. Like I'm not going to be able to leave. Like I'm not leaving. What happens if I can never leave again? What if, this was before they talked about variants and stuff too. This was like, what if it lasts forever? What if, and then you watch shows like Last Man on Earth. You
right,
ever watch
right,
that
yeah,
show?
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
Oh, it's great. Funny. Oh my God. He's so great in that show. He kind of makes it like, it wouldn't be that bad to be the last person on earth, I guess. But anyhow, that sensation, all of the like layers of emotional and psychological stuff that come along with this, I think we all have to address ourselves to being patient and realizing that it is going to take time for us to learn how to human again, how to be with other people.
Well, what's scary is Well, doesn't it scare you? I guess not. You're the kind of person that they say you have positional vertigo, and then the next day you're like, fuck no, I don't. You know, I don't have that, and then it goes away. So it may be a stupid question, but, you know, obviously we talked about your incredibly famous mother, Patty Duke, the late Patty Duke, God rest her soul, and she suffered from mental illness. In fact, there's an organization, the Mental Health, what is it called? Patty Duke Foundation.
The Patty Duke Mental Health Organization, which finally is making its first expenditure of money over. She died 5 years ago, almost 6 years ago. And just about almost exactly 6 years ago. At the end of next month, it'll be 6 years. We've just been holding the money because we raised a bunch of money, but it wasn't enough to start a foundation the way we wanted to. So now, connected with coming out of COVID, we're trying to help take this charity that does, it's a running charity, and it's for kids, elementary school kids. And it's a charity that I started, and it's been self-sustaining, but at this moment, because of COVID, it's going to have a dip. So we've actually figured out a couple of things that we can do. And because kids need, it's called Run Third. Is my charity that I started, and is my idea that I started, and then Mindy really started the actual charity. But it provides an after-school running program for elementary school kids in underserved areas. And the Run Third is, I run first for myself, so we're teaching the kids about self-empowerment. There's a whole curriculum. I run second for my family, so it's about connecting them with their family and giving their family a way to connect with them. Associated with this running kind of experience they're having.
Right.
And the third is, I run third for others. And so it's a hashtag RUN3RD. It's when I, in 2010, 11, 12, somewhere like that, I started this thing. And it becomes like a living prayer chain on the hashtag. And we've it's in 13 schools, 10 or 11 in Mesa, and then one in Arkansas and one in Massachusetts. And so it's having a dip at the moment because they can't do the normal fundraising they do. And there's a 5K at the end. So these kids, imagine a fourth, fifth grade kid. They don't do, you know, most of them don't run 5Ks. But you basically give them this little curriculum and you coach them and you give them an asterisk. Kids are happy to do whatever you do if you spend time with them. So we provide this after school experience with them. And they, at the end of it, it culminates with them doing this 5K run. And they put on their back the sign of the Run Third, who they're running for. So
that's great.
And the kids are like, they're so happy and they're so proud and they're so alive when they come through it. And it's a selfless thing. They're dedicating their run, so to speak, to other people. And so the Patty Duke Mental Health Fund, that money that I've parked in nowhere waiting for something to invest it in, we're going to support this because coming out of COVID, kids are going to need structure. They're going to need fitness. They're going to need some way to orient to the world. And I think it's actually a really good application of that. And the funny thing was, right the day after my mom, it was the day after she passed or the day after her funeral. It was like the day, I can't remember. It was like a couple days after she passed or something that I went to our 5K. So I went from Idaho where my mom lived down to Mesa, Arizona, where the 5K was, and people were, there's condolences and it was a whole thing. And so I don't know. I feel like there's a tie in there, but, what the fuck was your question?
It wasn't really a question. It was like talking about your mom and talking about the foundation and after she passed and mental health. But really the question is, did you ever worry? Cause it seems like someone you're not someone that would, I would worry that maybe bipolar, manic depressive, they're both the same thing utterly. Right. I mean,
If you opened up the diagnostic, you know, there's that manual, this big, I can never remember that it's the PD something. I can't remember what it is. It's the diagnostic manual for all mental illness. If you open it up, and I'm sure this is true for a lot of people, but if you look, you know, I am sure that I satisfy a great number of the criteria that would be listed on it. So the good, you know, we talk about my wife, to have a partner in managing my mental life is a gift from God, really. And then, you know, yeah, it's just very aware of me and my life and my history and just keeps an eye. And then the other thing I was saying was that we have kids and it is a hereditary situation. You know, the thing about the conical thing, just going back for a second about doctors, they are not very conic. Very conical.
Very conical.
No, I just want to say something about that diagnosis. Their jobs, doctors' jobs, are constantly under threat of, like, the liability that they live under. Everything they say could ruin their career, their practice, their financial life, their kids' fortune. So doctors generally will lean on a more severe interpretation of what, just they give you a harder diagnosis than
so to a cover lot of the bases.
Yeah. But I mean, you're like, oh, well, it's a permanent thing. Well, it wasn't permanent, but you know what? I can never say to the guy after 5 years, you never said that it was still going to be with me after you misrepresented
something. You said it would go away.
How many girls do you know who are like, I was told I could never have children?
Yeah, true.
Right.
Right. Well, people like you, you'll never walk again.
Right.
And then they walk.
Right.
If anything, it gives you, what's the word? Ambition or not hope. I mean, that would be a hopeless thing to hear. I mean, you'll never walk again.
I thought you meant the idea that they're not true. All this can give you hope, but they give you
determination.
Determination, yeah.
Determination.
I mean, that's really where people decide who they are. Like,
sure.
How are you going to receive such a harsh diagnosis? But I think with mental illness, you know, my mom's mental illness, her thing was use her diagnosis as I think we talked about this last time, but as an identity. Like, who are you? Are you the person who behaved badly on a few sets and in relationships and had a reputation for being volatile? Or are you a person who is a champion for something that you've overcome? So she chose that one. So
wow.
We all pick what we want our narrative to be, what we want our relationship to the public to be. And so I've always engaged the mental health bipolar discussion from the point of view of someone who grew up from a family member, as a family member.
Survivor in a way, right?
You know, that's a word. Yeah, sure. I don't like that word for me. I don't like it for me, but I certainly understand it. I mean, that word is, we're very aware of that word in modern culture right now because of the kind of the women's movement, you know, has advanced so significantly in the past few years. And being a survivor is like it's a new word in the vocabulary. It's not a new word, but it's gained real currency lately. So I wouldn't use it for me in with my mom's sense. But yeah, I mean, I think it probably is appropriate because, you know, it was hard. There were really, really, really hard, painful, tragic, violent, like bad times as a kid. But no, what I'm just saying, like I haven't wanted to talk about bipolar relative to me personally. I haven't wanted to say like that's my identity, that's who I am, that's my experience. Yeah. I've been more than happy to, because my mother for herself chose to make her experience, her diagnosis, her recovery, her advocacy, she made that a very public thing. She wrote books, she made a movie, she was on talk shows. I mean, it was her raison d'etre, you know, it's who she was. It's what she wanted her legacy to be. I don't want or need that to be my legacy. What I'm happy to do is travel around the country and speak to groups about bipolar disorder from the perspective of a family member. But, you know, anybody who knows me, who's experienced me in my life is like, oh, okay. You know,
wait. When you say okay, are you saying okay as if you might, not that you diagnose yourself, but when you read about things, you think there's a good chance that I probably have it and I'm working on it and it's a constant battle and something you don't really talk about?
Sort of. I mean, any commercial I see on TV for any ailment, I'm sure I have that ailment.
You know? We can always do that. I'm like, oh my God, my hair was flaky.
I'm sure I have it.
Oh my God. Fibromyalgia is, let me tell you, that thing is always on CNN. They must pay. If they would just not do ads, they'd probably save millions of dollars. But honestly, I look at the fibromyalgia and I look at it and I go, fatigue, constant fatigue. I'm like, oh my God, I got the fibromyalgia.
what I'm saying for me is that that's not a diagnosis that I want to make a part of my identity.
I hear you.
And you know what? It's funny because I talk in a lot of these talks that I do. I mean, I just gave a mental health talk to the American Correctional Association. It's like 1,500 correctional officers.
Right.
And talking about my mom's experience, talking about my experience growing up, offering my perspective and thoughts about things. And one of the things that I talk about is language. And how language is, I mean, the mental health field, the psychiatry in particular, has come so far. I mean, my mom's thing was we have to destigmatize, and you even see it now. That NFL football ad was so great about, you know, destigmatizing it and everything else. But in a way, that project of destigmatizing has worked in a lot of areas. Maybe not in all areas, but. You know, if you go to Indiana, where my wife is from, people are more than comfortable talking about their medications, you know, and, oh, I've got to go to CVS to get my medication. Oh, I have. And somehow it's like it's a little bit more socially acceptable now for people to use that phrase. And that should be encouraging to anybody who has an issue that like, oh, there's a lot of places in this world you can go where you are, where someone with that diagnosis is fully understood and accepted to be a total human being, and it's not going to limit your life.
And that's exciting.
That's exciting. It's thrilling. But the vocabulary of psychiatry actually, in a lot of ways, is meant to be used between physicians and the drug world, in pharmaceutical world, and the nursing community, and administrative people. And there's a lot of people for whom the vocabulary of mental illness is really efficient and proper and thrown everything else, but it totally fucks up a lot of people, you know, actual human beings who are actually being diagnosed, because in a lot of ways it's like a death sentence for people. It feels
it's like a
that.
Brand, like branding, you know, it's like, this is your label. This is who you are.
Well, that, but also just, you know, they call, one of the words is, patient, your mental health patient, but you're also, they use the word sufferer. Oh, this person's a mental health sufferer. And you're like, Jesus Christ, how's anybody supposed to develop like wellness in their life if they're constantly thinking of themselves indefinitely as a patient or indefinitely as a sufferer? Like, that vocabulary is not helpful. That people
is not sufferer is not something people want to associate themselves with. I am a sufferer.
And survivor and recovery. And like, those words can be very, very helpful and very empowering and very useful, particularly at certain phases of people's discovery of their own like wellness strategy. But for a lot of people, it makes it so they don't want to get a diagnosis. They don't want to go to the doctor. They don't want to consider the types of medications that might be available to them. They don't want to consider it because they just don't like the vibe. And to me, the community could do itself a big service by acknowledging that its communication skills are like the lagging thing in their progress.
Right.
And so what I was saying was, in terms of stigma, it actually is still there in a way. Like if you have your druthers, pick that diagnosis, you know, talk about that diagnosis or not. I get a lot of positive feedback when I say to people, when they ask me what you're asking me, like, you don't have to, and relative to my kids, relative to anybody, you don't have to tell anyone what your diagnosis is. You know, first thing, the willingness, the bravery it takes to put yourself up for some kind of evaluation to see if some sort of diagnosis is, you know, appropriate for you, that takes courage. It's terrifying for people to do that. Doing that and then getting the diagnosis, that's just the doctor's half of the equation. You have to accept the diagnosis. And if you're willing, you know, if the diagnosis isn't right for you and you don't accept it, you know, good for you that you went through a process where you are more armed with information than you were beforehand. If you get a diagnosis and you're willing to accept it because it's helpful to you, then that's great too.
Yeah, but I agree with
that. Then when it comes time to sharing your process and your experience, some people aren't like us. Some people don't feel good. Some people's work environment, for example, is not conducive. If you were to, you know, you may be legally protected, but it might make people uncomfortable because they have some, who knows what. So you people have to decide for themselves if and when they seek a diagnosis, they get a diagnosis, they accept a diagnosis, and they share a diagnosis. Each one of those things, guess who's in charge? Guess who's the boss of each one of those moments? You. You're the boss of your moment. You get to say whether you're going to go get a diet, unless you, you know, you find yourself in that situation because of circumstances that you are unable to control. But choosing to get a diagnosis, getting the diet, and by the way, it takes a lot of people. It's much, much faster now. I don't know what the newest statistics are with the Psychiatric Institute of America or whoever. I'm sure it's within like 18 months or something like that, but that's just me spitballing. But it used to be when my mom was alive, when she was in the mid 80s, it would take like 8 years to get an accurate diagnosis. 8 years.
My God.
Of suffering.
Yeah, until that's shit.
And, you know, by the way, doctors can be assholes. You know, doctors can be, and you never want to push away the possibility that someone could get help from a physician or a psychiatric professional, but they've come a long way too. They used to be real assholes. It, like, as a class, maybe not totally, maybe I was insulated from it, but my experience of people was that they were so arrogant and condescending and dismissive and unpleasant.
Unsupportive.
Yeah, unless it was in their way, you know? And now I've seen physicians, by and large now, what I've been exposed to, and it's anecdotal, so people have to make up their own minds and choose their own thing. But like, there is some humility that has worked its way into the system.
Absolutely.
Because now people don't have the same, their education, the physicians, their education. There's so much that they don't know and that they don't understand. And it's obvious to anyone that they don't know and they don't understand it, that it's like, well, this is what we do know. This is what we do understand. And we want to help you with this. But there's a lot of stuff we don't know. So I find that humility, when it's expressed by physicians, terribly reassuring, because I'd much rather have somebody tell me that they don't know something rather than hedge or fudge or use their personality or intimidation or something like that, to compel me to do something or to obfuscate the fact that they aren't on 100% sure footing with what they're saying.
You're on point today. You're very passionate and fiery about this, and I like it because you're passionate, very passionate about it. And I really appreciate that. Listen, this is called Shit Talking with Sean Astin. I like that kind of goes with your name. Shit Talking with Sean Astin.
My wife would concur.
These are questions from my patrons. Rapid fire, or, you know, if you really want to go a little longer, feel free, but it's rapid fire. Sophie M, if you could have 50 first dates, which I know you were in, what would your ideal date be to do over and over? Sit in a bathtub with your wife?
That's right where I went
with your wife. I mean, with you and your wife. I
honestly,
mean, wait.
This is true before COVID's missing year. There's something else I want to share with you, but a date.
You could do, what would your ideal date be to do over and over? I guess that, you know.
Honestly, there's a place we go in Hawaii, and we can either take our little golf cart or we can walk down to where the beachside grill is, and we sit there and we have a little drink, and yeah, just walking together, sun kissed, and walking down to the, you know, at sunset. Yeah.
You just got warm and fuzzy. Yeah, thinking of your wife after so bad 30 right now. Years of marriage.
This call and I'm like, we're going to Hawaii.
You're going to go either in the bathtub or to Hawaii. Maybe just take the bathtub.
There's a bathtub in Hawaii, just so you know.
Probably.
Oh, there's one other thing I want to tell you.
Yeah, go ahead.
So COVID, there's like epochs, the guitar period. I got better at the guitar. Not enough. I thought about bringing it in here, but not enough to bring it in here.
Play us something.
Okay, wait. Hold on.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy and there's no place that I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. Anyway.
I love it though. It's sweet. You enjoy it. I could see you enjoy playing guitar. You keep doing it. Play more.
But so there was that. Then my union got into there was a whole thing with stuff going on with the union business, and I got deeply invested in that for a couple months. And then, oh, look at this.
What happened? The dog's here, guys. The dog's here. Oh my gosh, look at that little monster. Look at those ears. What's her name?
What's her name again?
Holly.
You didn't know her name.
I know her name. Dad's one of our tricks is to make it like we're stupid. And so they're like, oh, he's just pretending he's stupid. And then when we really are stupid, which is most of the time, they can't tell the difference.
Okay, there you go. Okay, next question. Lisa H. In Encino Man, what was it like to work with Pauly Shore, honestly? And any thoughts for teaming up to make it an Encino Man 2, the older years?
We have all indicated that we would be more than happy to do a sequel. Personally, I want to know what Betty Nuggs looks like 30 years later. So that was that was a cave girl that came up at the end of the movie. Right. The tag of the movie.
I remember. What about Pauly?
Pauly was really focused, really knew his audience. He was really kind of at a sweet spot in his life and his career, where he was ambitious. He was kind of like the opposite of his character.
So wait, so he didn't talk to you in off camera like, hey, Shawnee, what's up, bud? What are you doing today, bud?
No, he was just very protective of the fact that he had his hit MTV show and this thing was going on and he was just protective of it. So no, he would talk to me, but we didn't get on that great because I didn't really want to be doing the movie.
Wait, you didn't get along that great?
Well, I mean, whatever. There wasn't anything bad. But
he
just
knew
like,
you didn't want to do it. So there was a little bit like, he didn't even want to be here.
No, I was kind of like, I had done some movies that were substantial movies.
Right. Like what? Besides Goonies and Rudy and...
I did Memphis Belle. They're not necessarily substantial in on the historical
record. Memphis Belle's a big movie.
But Memphis Belle was a movie that I did that was, I think, kind of an important movie. It was... Yep. Kind of a love letter to veterans of the air war in Europe. And it was David Putnam, you know, who did Chariots of Fire and The Mission.
It was a very memorable movie, but it took a lot to get you to do this scheduling and you weren't as passionate. So there probably was a little bit of animosity or whatever. I get it. Right.
Not animosity. Just
like how I throw that word at you. I just threw it out like you're like, yeah.
we just were like on different pages, but like Brendan Fraser and I would play video games in the dressing room.
Awesome.
We'd be like, and cut, and we'd run to the dressing room and go in the dressing room and play a video game. We bonded like that. Later in life and times, Pauly and I think like we like each other. Like we're I think we'd be happy to be interacting together. And I think I appreciated who he was and what he was doing at that time, but it just was not my scene. I'm just not the like guy who's going to like play a bunch of college campuses and, you know, talk about, you know, and just be hitting on all kinds of girls. And I don't know. It just wasn't my vibe, but I got why he had the audience. I got why it was fun and funny
right.
for him. It was me. I was the problem. I was the problem.
Maddie S. You've had an awesome career playing the underdog, morally good characters. If you could choose, what type and or characteristics of a villain would you love to portray on screen?
Maybe the vulnerability. You know, it's a really weird thing when someone can kill people and yet you're like, you feel for them. You're like, wow, that's coming from a place of pain. You know, because mostly you just think like, shoot that person and get them out of society.
Right.
But if you're an actor and you're studying like what goes into a villain, I don't know. That's just the first thing that occurs to me is that, you know, most actors who play villains tell you that they've got to find a way to find something about them to connect with. And I think that vulnerability, that sense of or injustice. I'm like an injustice-aholic. If I see injustice anywhere, it makes me so upset. It makes me so, even like a kid getting bullied or the country getting bullied or whatever it is, it just makes my blood boil. And to have a baddie who would feel a righteous sense of indignation and like they're doing what they're doing because they were wronged and they feel like it's the right thing to do. I don't know. And then, you know, usually there's some grotesque perversion inside of them that makes them a villain, but.
Rosie asks this. You always play great roles, sweet roles, guys you like. Have you ever worked with anyone that really bothered you, that was hard to work with, difficult to work with, and that was volatile on set?
There's one actor who, there's only one time I ever walked off a set. Like, I'm a professional. My mother was a professional. You know, she taught me at 8 years old and 10 years old, you know, how to hit your mark and can know where your light is and know your lines and be better for the other person off camera than you are on camera and you're on camera. Like, just the kind of nobility of professionalism. And that's what I've always... it's always been in my soul. Even when I'm cocky, I still think I have that somewhere. But there was this one actor who was playing this like tortured, angry person. And there was a scene where there's a group of people on one side and that person on the other side. I don't want to describe it too specifically, but the person with a prop, they used the prop violently. Too much, like they were not careful. The thing shattered and could have gone in people's eyes, and it was like unprofessional. And I walked over to the director and I just whispered to the director, "You better handle that." And the director looked at me like, "I don't understand what you're saying." I was like, "Did you just see what happened?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "Are you going to address that?" And he goes, "I think it's great stuff." I said, "Bye." And I walked out and he chased me down the street to the thing. And he said, I don't understand. I said, "What just happened was unsafe." I was like, "In order to work in an environment, it has to be safe." I was like, "So instead of punching you in the fucking face, I decided to walk away and let you continue your unsafe behavior without me. I'm so sorry. I didn't understand. Did you see it break? Yes. Was it planned to be broken? No. Could that chip have hit that person in the face? Well, could it? Yeah, I guess it could have. Yes. Did you ask that person if they felt that could have gone in their face? Go ask them if they felt that could, if they were scared. We're actors. There's a way in which we are, you know, our fear, we tap into genuine fear for it to work. But the kind of fear that comes from, you know, an out of control actor breaking something and almost injuring somebody is not okay. So I walked out. Well, that actor came out sobbing and so upset and so I ended up hugging the actor and talking through
it. So it worked out. It worked out at the end. It was just a big...
It worked out. We went back in there. That's not exactly like, you know, was there some human being? I'm sure there have been human beings that I was like not that fond much of. A fan of them as a human being. But that's the thought that came into my mind.
Wow.
Wait, I have to tell you this other thing. The third epoch. The guitar epoch.
Okay.
Union epoch. I got into grad school. For 6 months, I've been studying public policy and public administration at American University online.
What? Are you taking classes and getting grades? Are you doing well?
So far, but this interview is putting me behind. So no.
What a dick. I love it.
I'm doing well. It is the hard. It is incredibly hard. It's much, 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 much harder than I ever thought it would be. My brain is constantly being just bent in ways I didn't. I mean, one class was administrative law. I did 2 months of administrative law, reading probably 120 cases of Supreme Court decisions.
Oh, my God. Like, wow.
And writing about it and then studying, you know, all about
CBS Radford, 1973.
It's something I've always wanted to do. It's something I don't think I probably ever. The only time I ever got close was when I was doing Stranger Things. I had such a small part in it that I was studying for the GRE, like at my hotel room day after day, waiting to go to work for 10 minutes. And then I got a job that took me out of the country and I didn't fall through with it. So this actually, in a way, the pandemic has provided an opportunity for me that is a lifelong dream.
Dude, I'm proud of you. That's awesome. I could see how happy you are doing it, which makes me incredibly happy. All right, this is it, man. These are rapid now. You just answer them quickly. Here we go. Last few. Shit talking with Sean Astin. Leanne, when my brother was 18, he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. I had no idea what that was. I read your mom's book, A Brilliant Madness, really helped me gain perspective and understand my brother and his struggles a little better. So that was just a statement thanking you.
Well, yeah, amen. I thank her too. I've had so many people say the same thing to me. This isn't rapid fire, but the biggest one was at a nursing home where my retirement home, I guess, where my wife's grandfather was. We went to visit him. And when I came out of his room, this nurse saw me, barely any time to register who it was, the human that was in front of her, but she locked eyes on me and then she almost like physically collapsed and I had to like grab her. So I was like holding her up, like your knees are shaking, trying to hold this lady up. And she's sobbing. And she basically said the same thing that she just said.
Leanne said.
Was it Leanne? What was it?
Leanne, yep.
Yeah. So it where it was her father who was suicidal and he had a crush on my mom on her TV show in the 60s and he gave him her book and he read the book in one sitting and stood up and said, I want to live now. So, but wow. You know, that book was in our family, it was the cause of a lot of Sturm und Drang. Is that the word? The German word? It was a lot of hassle.
I'm a Jew. I don't know if that's the word.
Brothers were not happy. Dad was not happy. There was a lot of stuff in it that people didn't like. But then over time that pain from inside the family kind of went away. And this is the legacy of that book is it helps people, which is amazing.
Maya P, rapid fire. What's your proudest moment as an actor? The one moment that pops in your head when they got Best Picture, Lord of the Rings, was that it?
Yeah. On the volcano in Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. But that was a lot went into that moment, but yeah, I mean like a lifetime went into that moment, but I also, the movement of Rudy, where Rudy gets accepted into Notre Dame, that was a huge breakthrough for me. Huge breakthrough. If it wasn't for that, then the Lord of the Rings moment would not have been the same.
Beautiful. Mary B., your last visit inside of you really touched my soul. People say that nice guys can't make it in Hollywood. You seem nice enough. How do you keep balanced? How do you keep from straying from your moral center? And you've answered that in so many ways. So in one sentence, how could you sum that up?
You got to know your way back. To your moral center. Nobody lives pinned in a moral certainty. So my wife,
I love it.
Shows me the way back to it.
Find your way back. Find your way back to your heart. Do you know that song?
Yeah. There's another song that is one of my favorite songs on this thing. Go on. You have one more question, right?
Yeah. I mean, what you do to stay a positive, Ray H. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, you're with your family, you're doing this new thing online and doing something you've loved. So you kind of answered that one.
My wife has this philosophy, you know, she has a knee problem. She's needed a knee surgery, maybe a full knee replacement since before COVID. So her entire COVID has been limping. But she says that she makes a conscious decision, and I've seen her do this. There's times, you know, imagine she's got four kids, our three daughters and me, and dogs, lots of dogs. And it's like she's the gravity. She's the center of gravity for our family. And but it's not always easy and it's not always fun. And she, you know, the help she gives to the girls with their homework, with their studies, their online studies, is incredible. And she says that she makes a conscious decision in the morning when she puts her feet on the ground, that it's going to be a good day.
That is very important. There's many times where I just go, hey, I have these little signs next to my bed that says, breathe. It's okay. Life's good. You only get one. Let's go. Fuck it.
I'm withdrawing your privilege of having anxiety for 1 year.
You're like saying that I can't.
You're not allowed. You can have a little bit of anxiety, but when you reach a certain ceiling of it, Sean is there going, it's not today.
I'll probably think of that now. I'll probably think, no, you're getting anxious. I'm like, no, Sean wouldn't allow that.
You're allowed to be who you want to be, but I just, you are such, your
don't
soul
say it.
So good, dude. And anybody who has a soul that's as good as yours, deserves not to have an unreasonable amount of stress and anxiety.
I'm working. Look, I love you for saying that, and I really do, and I respect you, and I miss you, and I'm working on it, man. Sometimes things just happen, and you're so overwhelmed by them that you don't know where to begin again, and you feel like you're going, it's the same shit, it's the same routine, it's the same, you know, it's just part of, like, this is what you do, dude, this is what you do.
Wait a minute. You might have just found the path to your own salvation there. You just said you don't know where to go to begin again. Where can you go to begin again? What's a reliable place for you to go to begin again? If you can figure that out, oof, then everyone gets overwhelmed. Right. Everyone has, you know, problems and whatever. But at the moment where you go like, wait, I got to know where to go again, have a place.
You know what? That's brilliant. That is brilliant. I'm going to find that place because, let me tell you something, man. This is the end of this podcast, but yeah, I will say I feel better than I did when we started. I felt like, I don't know if I could do this. I'm really not in the mood. I'm a little lightheaded. I just feel tired, a little, you know, whatever, you know, I get in my head. I just felt like shit. And then after talking to you for 30 minutes, the first 30, I completely had a shift. Did you notice my shift, Ryan? It just... If you watch this video again, you'll see the shift from, because you comfort me, man.
I love you, man.
I love you too. Hey, give me a little made up.
The dizzy is, you just have to feel like a jazz musician.
Go with it.
You just have to feel like a jazz musician.
Pretend you're high. Hey, real quick, play an end outro to This Was Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum podcast with Sean Astin. Just make up something.
This was inside of you. This was inside of you. Oh, that's the one I did last time.
I like that. This has been inside of you. Hey, you know? Listen, I love you and I can't thank you enough for coming on again. Will you come on once a year?
Yeah, once a year, man. I'm your man.
Listen, when this is all over, when I'm allowed to your house, I want to come and just hang out and meet the family. I really haven't got a chance to do that.
The Mars pod. This, like, I feel like we're living in one of those biodomes that they set up. Like, can the astronaut survive for a year? So come on out to our dome. See, there may just be bodies. It may not even be.
That sounds appealing. All right. I love you, buddy. Thanks for allowing me to be inside of you again.
Love you, brother.
All my love to your family. And keep doing that course. I love that you're doing that.
I'm going to get a degree, baby. I'm going to get a master's degree.
I just, what can you say about this guy that hasn't been said?
I mean, he's done it all. He's a family.
What a career.
Man. Seriously.
And he just stays so humble and sweet.
I was looking over here because this is where the Rudy poster used to be.
Oh, yeah, the Rudy poster. But then I turned it into horror movie posters now.
Well, you got a theme, which is fine.
Yeah, but yeah.
That's where.
If you check it out on YouTube, you'll see that I have a Lost Boys original poster signed by Kiefer and Jason, and Evil Dead signed by Bruce Campbell, and a Fright Night poster signed by the director Tom Holland. I just love movies and love horror, and some people make fun of me for having these things, but Kurt Russell signed my The Thing and Escape from New York posters. Aliens poster signed by the cast. I think these are cool things. You may think you are a dork, Rosenbaum, but you know what? Jealous.
That's it. We're all just
totally
jealous. We're all just jealous.
Once again, if you want to listen to my band, the album just came out. I really do think you're going to like it. If it was crappy, I would not tell you to listen, but you can get the CD and you can get a lot of other great stuff. Beanies, trucker hats, lunch boxes, coasters, all on the sunspin.com website. That's correct. And you could also get all the amazing Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum, pictures from inside of you with Michael Rosenbaum, or Lex Luthor pictures, Flash pictures, even Sorority Boys pictures.
Oh, man.
They can get all this stuff at the Inside of You online store. Lex shirts. There's just so much great stuff out there. So, I mean, if you think that stuff's great. I want to say thank you again for listening, and please subscribe. As Ryan told you, you know the handles. If you listen to the beginning, I don't think you're going to start listening to this podcast at the end. So, always looking for more people. So if you like this podcast, tell a friend and have them listen. If you were here for Sean Astin, hopefully you'll come back next week for whoever it is. We're trying to get bigger and bigger guests, and that is always what we're striving. Good guests, I should say. We're just trying to get good guests. At the end of the day, you want a good guest. I'd rather have a good guest than a big guest, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but you seem to you've done a good job, especially lately, of like getting it out. Like if there's ever any doubt in anyone's mind that like, oh, you know, you find the angle and you get in and you really do. They're all good episodes.
Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah.
Well,
man.
Thank you. And you edit them, and that means a lot. I tried to, again, I tried to think like just regular human beings, not like some actor going, hey, let's. I just really try to ask questions that I'm interested in and kind of go down the little rabbit holes of.
Well, you start there, and then it always ends up with the human story. I mean,
I hope.
Yeah.
That's the goal. So keep listening.
You get there.
Listen to Ryan. Will you listen to the boy?
It always happens.
Yes.
The goods are in there. They're always in there.
The goods are in there.
The goods.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate all the letters that you guys write me on hello@insideofyoupodcast.com. They're awesome. I read them all the time. If I don't respond to you, I don't respond to everybody. I can't possibly, but I read them and I'm touched by them. So if you want to leave any messages, hello@insideofyoupodcast.com, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And you can leave messages there. Sometimes people say, oh, I just made an order, but I gave the wrong address. I'm like, well, chances are I didn't look at that in time and I sent it to the wrong address. So I don't know what to tell you. Sometimes I send free stuff. There was a smudge once, smudge, but the dude's a collector. I got it. So I was like, look, send it back. I'll give you some extra goodies and stuff. I'll sign it. I'll make it better.
I mean, then they could just clone you. They could just take your DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Just take your little fingerprints.
I always try to do the right thing, Ryan. I always try to make everybody happy. And that's my problem because I can't make everybody happy. You can please some of the people, some of the time, a few of the time, but you can't please all the people all the time. That's just the way it goes.
No.
I don't know. Again, my patrons who make this show possible in so many ways. First of all, thank you, Westwood One. Thank you, Ryan, for amazing editing and engineering. Bryce for producing and really sticking with me, guys. I appreciate it. I love the podcast. A lot of people really love the podcast. So I want to thank those guys for sticking with the podcast. My patrons, if you want to join Patreon, again, patreon.com/inside. I'll message you back as soon as possible. Here are the wonderful top tier patrons who I send them merch every 3 months or every 4 months. And I, you know, write little personalized notes and hopefully they're enjoying their time as a top tier patron. And also thank you for coming to stage a few weeks back and supporting the band. We play every last Saturday of the month, 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time show. Here are the patrons: Nancy D, Mary B, Leah S, Trisha F, Sarah V, Little Lisa, Yukiko, Jill E, Brian H, Lauren G, Nico P. You can see them right here. They're on YouTube. Look at this. It's just amazing technology.
Wow.
Robin S, Jerry W, Robert I, Jason W, Apothean, Kristen K, Amelia O, Allison L, Jess J, Lucas M, Raj C, Joshua D, Emily S, CJP, Samantha M, Jennifer N, Jackie P, Stacy L, Carly H, Carly S, Jan S, Jamal F, Janelle B, Carrie B, Tabitha 272, not to be confused with.
Tabitha 273.
That's correct. Jesus. Ashley Ryan, Kimberly E, Mike E, Marissa N, Eldon Supremo, Dan, Jack S, love ya, Ramira, Beth B, Santiago M, Sarah F, Chad W, Leanne P, Ray A, Maya P, Maisha C, Maddie S, Kendra Graff, Ashley E, Shannon D, Matt W, Belinda N, Kevin V, James R, Chris H,
Osbjorn,
Amy C, Dave H, Samantha S, Spider-Man Chase, Sheila G, Ray H, Alyssa C, Tabitha T, Misha H, Tom N, Henry S, Katie F, Liliana A, Michelle K, Hannah B, Michael S, Talia M, Luke H, and here's the last patrons: John S, Andrew T. Can we have music, please? Claire M, Liz J, Laura L, Chad L, Rochelle E, Nathan E, Brandel, Taylor K, Neil A, Marion E, Meg K, Janelle P, Dan N, Jennifer J, Wayne M, Diane R, Ojeda, Lorraine G, Olga C, Corey M, Carrie H, Veronica K, Big Stevie W, and Kendall T. Those are the top tier patrons, and I thank you for the continued support and love, and I hope you are continuing to love the show, and I try to message you when I can. It's not easy. Let's do a YouTube live soon too. We got to play some music in the request line. So my patrons, make sure you come to the YouTube live. Right now we only get a couple hundred, where You'd think all the patrons would come to it, but they're busy. They have things going on in their lives.
People got stuff to do.
People got shit to do, man. Thank you for allowing me to be inside of each and every one of you from my home in the Hollywood Hills of California.
I was trying to do trumpets, like the show tune.
Keep doing it. I'm Michael Rosenbaum.
I'm Ryan Tejas.
Yep, and we love you guys. And we give a little wave to the camera. Hey, thanks so much for joining me on this Tuesday. I know you guys are busy or whatever day it is on your way to work, on your way home. If you're having a tough day, I wish you the best day. I hope it gets better. It will get better. We got to make the most out of this life that we're given. And I appreciate everybody and all their support. Thanks.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.